Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
How are we doing, everybody? And welcome back to Crime Theory with myself, Ron Swanson, and of course, John Wedger here on the Sean Atwood channel. And today we're kind of going to recap the cases that are starting to build a larger picture, starting to put a lot of evidence and bolstering the reality of these horrific individuals who prey on children at the highest echelons within the UK government and across the EU. It's quite shocking, and we're compiling, and we're almost ready to put our theory out there, but we thought it would be best to give you guys an episode where we recap the prime cases, and then next week we should have a mind map and an episode all about what we've been working on. Isn't that right, John?
That's right, yeah. It's It was called, the actual title was called Anna Kappa Chart, and it's an investigative tool that we used in the police, and there's actual experts on these charts. And it's like most things, when you get a pictorial representation, that embeds it in your mind, because we dream in symbols. And if you look at the old shops, you know, they would advertise what they were, you know, purveying by the symbolism outside the shops. We don't dream in numbers and you know, and flipping spreadsheets and things like that. We dream in symbols and stuff like that. So this is how the mind works, and when you see it laid out, it makes sense. So it's hopefully people will see the connections.
Yeah, absolutely. And the data over time, when you see it laid out, that's when things start clicking. I think when there's enough time between each case, there's enough world events to distract us, it's very easy for even major cases to go unnoticed in this pattern that seems to be forming, John. So I think it's important that we recap, because it is a lot to take in. Some of you may have missed a week or two, and I encourage you all to, if you're going to share an episode, this is the episode to be sharing. This is the one to be making sure people watch, and then we'll have a playlist linked below of all the individual episodes for you guys to go and binge and ruin your weekends over. But yeah, let's dive in, John. And I mean, this all goes back to the 50s. You know, I believe our first case, or our oldest case, was Moira Anderson, and that's really where we're going to start the ball rolling. We'll go numeric, we'll go chronologically, if that's the right way of putting it.
Yeah, of course.
And we're like, yeah. I say, this is effectively the Cliff Notes versions of the larger episodes. So we're going to be mainly focusing on what you guys need to know, which is the patterns, the dates, the individuals who are key players and repeated key players, whether it's judges or police or politicians. And we are going to be kind of steaming over it. So if you want a broader in-depth look, there is a playlist below that's got the individual episodes. And next week, it could be the week after, depending on some witnesses and other aspects that we're still tying down, but it's coming and it's pretty scary. So let's jump into the case of Moira Anderson, 1957, John.
Yeah, so, you know, we got little Moira that went missing in a town called Coatbridge. And again, one of the things we look at is the the person that goes missing, the child, these all sort of child murders that we look at, they're a point of investigation. They're a crime scene in their own right. Then we have like the site in which, you know, they're found. If that's different to where they're murdered, both will be a crime scene. And we've always got to think evidence and always got to think forensics. And forensic is just evidence for a court. That's all that means. It's nothing more scientific than that, because you get forensic science, you know. So it's evidence for a court. And then the suspect or suspects. And then you've got to look at patterns, because there's always patterns in everything. And usually the suspects, there's usually a pattern of offending. The victim, it might be, do they walk that route regular? And one of the things we see with these children, not all of them, but most of them, is that, you know, they're on the street a lot. And when you get child abductions, you tend to get the feral kids, the runaway kids. The kids have got no parents really looking after them, problems at home, kids that are in the care system, things like that. They're going to be easy prey. And especially when, you know, you'd look into cases of ritual abuse, they would tend to pick kids that have been abused in the past as well, because it was like almost the work had been done, as it were, for these perverts.
Yeah, the conditioning.
And the other thing we've got to look at is the location, you know. And Coatbridge, it just hit in my mind, firstly because of Moira Anderson. I mean, I can remember looking at this case when it was put my way when I was on the investigation into the child prostitution in London, and someone said, look at the Moira Anderson case, the similarities are unbelievable. And that's when I got to know about Coatbridge. And it was only a bit later on when I started doing investigations into Fred West, realised, well, actually, at the same time, Fred West was in Coatbridge. And you think, And then you've got to look at the fact that it always gets pinned on one person. And it's not one person. And this is one of the things I think we've sort of made very apparent,
yeah,
that this is a pinball ring. And something even more sinister than this is they tend to stitch someone up.
Yeah,
You know, so we saw that with, you know, Leslie Molsey with Stefan Kishko, and we saw that in the this one as well. They tried to pin it on some guy, didn't they? It was I think he was he had an alibi because he was in the Territorial Army that weekend.
Yeah.
But they tried to stitch it on some local fella. And the other thing is, we've got to look at the investigation team, because the initial investigation team weren't match fit. Now, is that deliberate? Well, it might be, because if you get an area with not a lot of murders, then they're not really going to be that good. And you get other areas, especially of London, that get a lot of serious crime and murders, that they're very sharp. And we saw with this, with Coatbridge CID got the case removed and it had to go to Strathclyde, who's again screwed it up. And it was only really when a detective inspector looked at it with fresh eyes much, much later, and they officially took it away from a missing person case into a murder inquiry in the 2000s, that we started to get progress. And then the Crown Prosecution made a bold statement that who becomes the suspect, this Alexandra Gartshaw, the bus driver, had he been alive today, he would have definitely got charged. Okay. However, when they spoke to the original senior investigating officer, even up until recently, I don't know if he's still alive, he still claimed it was this other guy who was slightly slow and maintained it was always him. Of course, it wasn't, you know. And we see that as a pattern as well. And is it incompetence? I think it goes far beyond incompetence. I think this is a very sophisticated cover-up mechanism we see with a lot of the cases that we've exposed.
I think you're right. And when you mentioned there about different areas of the country having different resources and skill sets for solving crimes, and, you know, when you're cherry-picking what areas you go to, that is just another element that you could put down to the by design. You know, the areas in which it's easier to effectively get away with the crime compared to others, but also the incompetence of those who are put in charge of the cases.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I mean, times change as well. And one of the amazing things that comes out of it is these statements that the police make, that when you actually sit back and you use common sense and you put aside prejudice and put aside this attitude that the police know what they're doing, you know, put all that to one side. I mean, this original senior investigating officer come up with this notion that on a cold February morning, snowy, cold February morning, no morning, sorry, late afternoon, sorry, early evening, in darkness, that this 11-year-old girl got on the overnight bus and made her way to central London at the age of 11 years old. I mean, it's just...
That's madness.
At what point? But where we saw this was in Belgium when two boys went missing. And no, I think it was a brother and a sister. So anyway, they went missing. They were murdered. And very similar time of year, similar age. I think these kids were even younger, maybe 8 or 9 years old. I can't remember exact names. And the police said, oh, you know, they're probably just hiding out as mischievous kids do. In fact, they've been abducted and murdered. And the question went, well, they'll be cold and they'll be hungry. And this was the official narrative of the senior investigating officer. He said, oh, well, it's rural out here. They'll do what most kids do, and they'll dig up some potatoes, they'll eat them, they'll find somewhere warm, and they'll be okay. I mean, cognitive dissonance doesn't even cover it. It's absolute mental that anyone would come up with that. And what's even worse is someone accepts it.
Yeah. This is the thing. So, in Moira's case, where was the first case we're covering? Obviously, we've had the crime being pinned on a local person who is a bit slow in the mind, and the evidence that there's a larger group of individuals, and it's important. It's important for the listeners to understand that even though all these cases we're talking about is one individual that has been effectively charged with crimes, this is a much bigger picture, and there's some of the cases where we've had different suspects who's been seen dumping bodies, and it raises a lot of suspicious alarms. And you know, Moira's case is horrific, and what these kids, you know, the final moments of their lives is just so horrific to think of. And the individual's mindsets towards these children and seeing them just as disposable trash is so prominent in all these cases. It's very, 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 very enraging. And Brian McDermott, Roy Tuttle, he was in 1968. And this is where Brian Fields comes into the...
I mean, if we just before we depart from Moira Anderson, let's look at the information that came through later in the inquiries when Fred West was named, as well as Thomas Hamilton, who was the massacre in Dunblane, which went on, you know, to slaughter, shoot all these young children in this primary school. So this guy turned around and he could link Alexandra Gartshaw and Fred West and Thomas Hamilton as part of a group known as the Untouchables. And they were a people group operating in that area.
So just spell that out, John. We've got... Just reiterate again the names on that list and the individuals.
Right. So a guy came forward, right? I think he was either in prison with Alexandra Gartshaw or something like that. I can't. You'll see it in the original radio documentary that we did on it.
Okay.
Anyway, he supplied the police with information. he was attacked by the press, but he went on to make a statement, many page statement, and put his name to it for a Crown Court. And he was prepared to swear on an oath that he had information that Moira Anderson, her death, was a result of an active paedophile group in Coatbridge. Members of the group involved included senior police officers, bus drivers. Again, Alexander Gartshaw was a bus driver, and also Thomas Hamilton and Fred West.
Now, for those maybe have never heard of Moira Anderson, I can tell you most people listening will know some those names and know the incidents that are tied to those names. And when we get to the Dunblane case and you realise the media silence that has been inflicted on this case, questions are raised when you realise what the individual who committed that massacre was actually involved in and the political ties that he has. This is where it all starts to snowball and become very messy, because everything starts to become clear.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And how connected it is, you know, how these people all know each other. And it's not by coincidence. It really isn't. You know, so they're known. It's so especially with Fred West in the mix. And you've got to look at Fred West. He was active in.
Here is a word from today's sponsor, Aura.
If you Google someone, you can find out all kinds of personal information about them. This information is accessible because of data brokers who profit by selling your information to robocallers, telemarketers, spammers. You can use my link, https://aura.com. Aura is A-U-R-A. /Sean Atwood, S-H-A-U-N-A-T-T-Wood. To try 2 weeks for free and see how many data brokers are sharing your info. Also linked in my description box on this YouTube version, or scan the QR code on the screen.
Aura also monitors your emails and passwords to see if they were involved in a data breach and exposed on the dark web, and gives you the recommendations on what to do.
Aura has almost every internet safety tool you'll ever need, all inside one app.
Philia up there, and also killing people. He would run people over. So he had a lust for murder, you know, and abuse of children.
That's right, yeah.
Or throughout his adult life, you know, throughout his life, really. But to have him, I mean, him and his wife went on to become the biggest serial killers that we've known. And, you know, again, the links there with Mark Dutroux is that the detectives from the West Inquiry were dragged out to help with the Brussels police because of the similarities between the crime scenes and the suspects.
Yeah.
And Fred West was very connected to police officers. He had the Black Magic Club.
I was just going to say, was there not a particular organization that hung around in Barnes that connected Fred West?
Well, again, his son said, look, my father was part of a group called the Barn Club, and they're around West. 391 people went missing. You know, they can pin that amount on him, but his son said that a lot of them missing persons were attributed to his father, who would procure these individuals for murder and torture in this ritualistic group. And again, we know, well, I know from the amount of information and research I've done into satanic ritual abuse, a lot of it takes part in barns. And when they found, excavated and exhumed, lots of the bodies, they had ritualistic sort of bindings around them, skulls that have been taped up, a left hand missing, which is a massive significance in ritualistic murder.
Yeah, in the video where we present all of this, I'm doing my research on the ritual side and what a lot of the hidden meanings are behind this stuff. And something as simple as an injury specific to one side of the body has such relevance throughout all of this as well. And that is something that is crucial for you to grasp.
Well, let's look at why the left side, you know, and the Latin word for left is sinister. I mean, you know, even in Southern Ireland up until recent years, they would say that a left-handed person had the devil in them. and you know, it's Muslims, especially in the Arab world, they tell the adolescent young virgin girls to lay on their left side because in witchcraft, the left side is where the devil enters. The demons enter on the left. So it's got a huge significance, you know, and it's not by chance that these things are done. And the hand as well. The hand is used to give good luck. If you ever see the film The Wicker Man, the original Wicker Man with Edward Woodward, there's a scene in there where they leave a burning hand outside his room. And there's the ceremony of the hand, which is a satanic ceremony, you know, and it's the left hand's got huge significance. So, you know, these things are done for many reasons. And also there is a perverted level to it because these people are pedophiles. And so as well as that a young child has got huge value and huge sacrificial value in Satanism, also that there is also a perverted need for them, a sexual perversion for them. And if you read the book Dances with the Devil by Audrey Harper, Audrey was an ex-Satanist and then become a born-again Christian, and she went on to make a Channel 4 documentary with Roger Cook about Satanism. It's a fantastic episode. And she goes on to admit to her role in procuring children for sex parties for these people. Because they, you know, on top of everything else, they still like to have all young children in them. So there's more than one reason why these kids go missing.
Yeah.
And then they pin it on one person. So whether or not that person gets caught, and the rules are like the mafia, shut your mouth, you know, take the punishment and never reveal anything, otherwise we kill you. Maybe that's why Fred West died in a very similar way to Jeff.
Yeah,
we see this a lot. We look at Ian Huntley, for the kidnap and murder of Jessica and Holly. I mean, again, I'm not convinced it was down to him.
Do you know, two children. I don't know if we've done that case yet. That might be.
I
tell you what, that might be one that comes next week if we've not fully ironed out the presentation video, because that might be one that's worth. Covering
and what they did with him on remand, he was the first ever prisoner to be sent straight to Rampton Secure Hospital for the criminally insane, and then he was never the same afterwards. What did they do to him? You know, there's never underestimate these people. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, the Moira Anderson, what for me was the one that really got me looking into. There is a bigger connection, and that was from a detective, gave me a book and said, read this. This will help you with the investigation you're on, and it did. And they said, there's always more to it. And then we, you know, I read a book on geographical mapping murder, geographical profiling, it's fantastic, you know, and as well as sort of the tradecraft of investigation. So the Moira Anderson case will always be. A fascinating one for me, because it really started. That was a thing that really opened my mind.
Yeah,
and realised that this isn't one individual. This is a ring, very highly sophisticated, organised ring. And this is where we started with Moira, and we see this pattern, this algorithm.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
emerged.
The perfect word for it, John. Algorithm is the perfect word for it. If I'm being honest.
Yeah. So we move on to. Brian Fields.
This is
something that I had a huge input in this, because I did a bit of independent investigation into the two young boys that were termed the milk carton kids that went missing in the 90s in Solihull, and it's always believed to this day that Brian Fields murdered them. And, you know, Barnfield's, again, interesting character, a dangerous man, and a hugely, hugely connected man.
Yeah.
You know, he went away for the murder of Roy Tuttle in 1968, a 14-year-old schoolboy that went missing on his way home from school in Surrey. And Roy was walking home because he was saving money to buy a bike. And so there would have been a pattern. So Brian Fields would have sort of known. And Brian Fields, you know, we look at him as a crime scene. You know, who is Brian Fields? And he's an anomaly. He's he didn't get caught for this murder for a good 30 years. He got away with it. It was only by chance on a DNA test from blood taken as a result of drink driving that it pinged up and it matched semen that was on the clothing of Roy's body when it was found. So he got away with it. And he was sort of semi-skilled labourer that had a very transient nature. On his private life, he was a violent man. He was a woman beater. He was a closet homosexual. And he was a child murderer. He was a murderer of young boys. He had a passion for young boys. But when you look at his past, but people liked him because they were ignorant to that, we assume. But he was a bit of a character. He was a strong guy, very fit for his age. You know, very knowledgeable, very intelligent. And again, this is the other thing we see sometimes with a lot of people with high IQ. There's very deceptive characters. The stupid ones tend to get caught, whereas the guys like Brian Fields tend to string this out for many, many years.
Yeah.
So wherever he went, people liked him. Oh, very transient, would move on. Again, a trail of destruction wherever he moved. But his past was, he was an ex-Royal Marine, and he would play rugby for them and things like that. But then we go, you know, back further. He was brought up in a kid's home. He was the product of he's a what they call a bastard. You know, his father wasn't there. His mother was a prostitute, yeah. Placed into care basically from birth. And again, we got to look at the damage done. Kids that are divested from their mother. The earlier, the more the damage. He was placed into a care home by foster parents who went on to win some national award and actually end up going on This Is Your Life for services to fostering. And there's nothing ever come out from Brian that he was abused, but he was definitely an abuser. He was a bully, and he went on to sex abuse and rape living in his home. Now, what is interesting with this is that there's a lady who's written a book. Her name's Jenny. She's written a book about, it's called A Child from Nowhere.
Okay.
It's about her life in satanic ritual abuse and in foster homes. And she was classed back in the same era, really, as both these crimes. She was it's a black girl, but she was classed as a child of difference. And back then, there wasn't many black children in the care system, you know, especially outside of the big urban conurbations. She was out in High Wycombe in Buckinghamshire, and she was placed into the foster care of these two couple who, again, like Brian Fields' foster carers, went on to win a national award for their services to children of difference. So this lot would take on ethnic kids and disabled kids, and what they would do, they would keep them in a shed, they would ritually abuse them, hold them for domestic servitude, feed them out dog bowls, torture them, basically.
Yeah,
torture them,
unbelievable,
and sexually abuse them. And they went on to win an award. So the fact that these people win awards means nothing. And Brian Fields didn't wake up one day and decide, I'm going to rape kids, especially when he was a young one himself. That would have been trauma-driven and learned behaviour. So there's every chance Brian Fields as a child was sexually abused, and probably by these this foster family.
Well, I mean, when you look at the data, it wouldn't be far off to assume that. I mean, to do what they did and then go on to win awards, if that's not putting it in plain sight, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and again, Brian Fields travel around the country. Brian Fields is connected to a guy called Sidney Cook. Sidney Cook, if you don't know who he is, you've got to research this guy, aka Hissing Sid. He's probably the most notorious file the UK's ever had. And he was part of a gang called the Dirty Dozen. And one of the members of his gang was a guy called Lenny Smith. Brian Fields was associated with Lenny Smith. They served prison time together.
So just to recap, we've got the Untouchables and the Dirty Dozen. That's the first two collective known or talked about groups of individuals that prey on kids in this narrative. And do you know if it was the press that gave them their names or if they just, it was the press?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure whether it was a police name or whatever, but they've definitely termed it in the press as the Dirty Dozen. They never really fully released who they were, but there was Oliver Smith, Oliver Bailey and Cook. They were known really for the murder of a runaway called Jason Swift.
Okay.
And who over a period of days was tripped to death. And it was from his body that the murder investigation went on, and the group were investigated for the death of 9 boys, and very weird stuff went on. Cook was a ringleader, and Cook didn't get charged with conspiracy to kidnap and murder 9 boys. He just got done for a co-defendant, not even the ringleader. Sorry. The code D in a conspiracy to commit manslaughter on 2 of the boys, and actually got his sentence reduced. This is a connected individual, Sidney Cook, and we can link him to Brian Fields. We've also got a connection with the fairgrounds. We can connect Brian Fields to the fairgrounds, Sidney Cook definitely to the fairgrounds. And these people were linked in with moving around the country in a fairground. And I think it was West Midlands Police made a statement, something like 35 missing children linked to this bigger group. So that's to Brian Fields and Sidney Cook.
Okay, so here we've reached our first slap on the wrist, okay, from a criminal who has done outrageous crimes. And the sentence doesn't seem to match that, right?
Yeah.
And
it's very disproportionately low.
Yeah, and the reason I don't mean to be sounding like I'm the narrative for any 6-year-olds who's watching here, because I'm dumbing this down. I'm just highlighting the key points that are just so important to get drummed into your head. Groups and individuals, these repeating patterns, and the first occasion of a lenient sentence for an individual who has done such horrific crimes towards kids. Now, I'll also point out as well, we've got our first mention of, you know, the classic job and career path for these individuals with Cook and the fairgrounds, right?
Yeah. So, and this isn't the last time we're going to come across this connection, because we see it a few times. We've got this transient nomadic lifestyle of the fairgrounds. They have a route that they publish. I think the National Archive have got copies of these routes, and that they go around, don't they? And you just see these posters going up in your town, fairground here, bank holiday, whatever. And there's a few families that they're sort of old school Romany gypsy types, you know, fairy gypsies, they call them. And off they go. They're showman's licenses. And you would get some vendors latch on to them as casual, unskilled labour. Cook was very, very much into this way. And, of course, they have access to kids, because kids love the fairgrounds. And you get a lot of delinquent kids, runaway kids, that sort of get drawn in, you know, late at night. They're still there because they've got nowhere else to go. So,
even I remember when I was growing up, primary school, you know, early years in high school, when the shows, as we would call them, came to the Meadows,
right.
You know, that was the frickin' place to be. You know, come the weekend, or, you know, if you're out late, allowed out a little bit later or whatever, that was the place to be. And, you know, there was always the creepy carnies, and there was always that one girl in the school who was like 14 or 15 that was, you know, getting involved with the guy who runs the waltzers. And, you know, when you're a kid and you're at high school, and this is happening year after year, you don't really think about it as much as you do when you're an adult. But that is some wildly creepy activities, and obviously highly illegal activities. And I mean, there was never any girls abducted from my school, but it was definitely prevalent, John. The predatory mindset was definitely prevalent. There we go. That was what I was trying to say.
I mean, Phil, you can follow him around the country, and wherever he went, boys got abducted and assaulted and murdered. And he ends up, you know, during the '90s in the West Midlands, and these two boys go missing, in 1996, and David Spence and Patrick Warren went missing on Boxing Day in 1996, and there was a police inquiry linked into it. Fields was living nearby. And he worked as a landscaper labourer, and he had access to various bits of land where he was known to dig and bury things. And he was caught on many occasions digging and burying things. And again, there was a whole trail of offending around this guy, and there was a really botched police investigation into it. And one of the original investigators did make a comment saying, look, this is a cover-up. This is a cover-up. I got caught up in this, and we set up an independent investigation into it, and we did start excavating a bit of ground, and we did a lot of good work. Had cadaver dogs involved and all sorts of things. And part of my investigation plan was to visit Fields in Wakefield Prison. So I wrote to him, and I was going to go up there with an FBI profiler and a specialist interviewer to see if we could talk to him and see if he was prepared to reveal something. And I wrote to Fields, and the next thing I get a letter from the Home Office Intelligence Unit threatening me with arrests for harassment if I ever wrote to him again.
That's crazy.
There's a huge cover-up around Brian Fields.
Yeah, you got to smell a rat when an ex-police officer writes one letter and is threatened to that degree. It's quite hair-raising, and it's just more fuel to the fire, John.
I had a few meetings with West Midlands Police, and one was a face-to-face meeting, and it was appalling. It was just, I've worked with these people for decades, so I know what to expect. But the level of arrogance that we met from the senior investigating officer that's taken on this case. Again, these missing boys, for years, it was put down as, a missing person. Missing person, this was the milk carton kids. It was years before they actually adopted it as a murder inquiry. But one of the things that come out of this was that a well-known West Midlands comedian, information come in that at the time these boys went missing, Brian Fields was doing a patio for this well-known comedian, and there was a report given to the police that this guy was seen before he was putting down the concrete foundations for a new patio. He was seen to take quite a large item in the early hours of the morning into the the landfill site.
Of course, yeah.
In this guy's garden, just before the slab of concrete was laid. And the police never ever did any sort of geophys on it or anything. They just said, no, we're not taking it up, which I found very, very odd, but very hostile, very condescending investigation team, arrogant, and bear in mind, the original lot that looked into it, one of the coppers said, this is a massive cover-up. So, again, remains an open case.
Yeah.
In my opinion, Brian Fields was part of a pedophile group, and I don't think he worked alone. He was part of a big pedophile network, and we can connect him to the most infamous gang of child rapists and murderers, and that was a Dirty Dozen run by Hissing Sid, a.k.a. Sidney Cook.
Yeah. It doesn't get any better moving forward, people. We're just breaching now into the 70s. We've left the swinging 60s, and we're into the 70s now, and... hang on a second. Yeah, Brian McDermott and Leslie Malseed, have we just covered them? I beg your pardon. Have I just...
No, we haven't.
Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
You know, Brian Dermott, hopefully we will go into greater details about.
Yeah, give us the...
that one, give that us the one really
yeah, give
does
us,
need...
yeah, give us a quick summary of the points that are relevant. You don't go too deep into the case, because like I say, that's a major presentation.
Yeah. 1973, September 1973, young lad, I think an 11-year-old boy called Brian McDermott goes missing from a park, out playing in a park with his pals. I think his mates were, I've got enough to confirm this,
yeah,
were both residents of Kinkora Children's Home, which, again, there's been many, many, many documentaries done on the abuse and trafficking of children.
Yeah.
At very high level, and murder of children at Kinkora. So, anyway, it's the same area. This young boy, he goes missing, and he's not seen again. And the police, you know, don't really take it seriously. But the strange thing is, information gets sent to the RUC that this is a ritualistic witchcraft killing, but not on one occasion, quite a few occasions. So the RUC actually start looking at it as a witchcraft killing, because his body days later appears in the River Laggan and it's been mutilated. Now, when we do the program, I'm going to go into a lot more detail about the mutilation of this body.
Yeah.
And on information which has not ever been put out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to need to inform both the Garda and the RUC of the information I've got before I put it out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's
only right that they're allowed to.
It's serious stuff. And like John's saying, we're not going into the cases. We're just mentioning the points that are relevant to connect this big picture together. I know it's a lot to take in, people. There is visuals coming as well. John and I are working on a big mind map that will be made available to you all, so that you can... It's easier to see patterns when they're color-coded and in front of you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well Brian, he's one of, I think, about five kids that go missing and get murdered in the area. In that period of time, all young boys. At the same time, allegations are coming out regarding the Kinkora Boys Home.
Yep.
And the you know, institutional rape of young boys, and some of that by parliamentary figures within the Protestant community of Northern Ireland. There's an interesting character called Colin Wallace, who's an officer in the intelligence corps and working with the intelligence services in the UK. And he starts looking into this, and he's actually told to go and start setting up mock satanic ritual abuse sites in the area at the time. Which is something they'd never done before. Bear in mind that that's the information being received is that Brian Mulseed has been killed by a witchcraft people group, which is something I can really assist with, which will really add weight to the fact that may well have been the case.
Yeah.
And so the RUC are then sort of basically bullied into changing their mind and putting it down to a murder, just a standard murder of a mutilated corpse. But then once that occurs, and bear in mind all the figures that were involved were allegedly involved with the Kinkora rapes and murders, you know, it was very politically destabilizing, as we found with the Dolphin Square and the Elm Guesthouse in the UK. They then start looking elsewhere, and they then pin the murder on his Brian's teenage brother, who was about 16 at the time, and said it was a tit for tat retaliation attack because Brian, a few days earlier, had hit his brother with a stick. So his brother had murdered him. You know, bear in mind, I think his brother was 14 at the time, and he got arrested when he was 16. But bear in mind, you know, the narrative is that his brother, who loved him, because he got hit by a stick, decides to kill him, mutilate his body, decapitate his body, and then dump his torso in a nearby river, right, a fast-flowing deep river, and then carry on with his life and say nothing to his parents. Now, you know, what level of psychopathy have you got there if someone does that? I mean, it's one thing, you know, going out stealing as a kid and or hitting your brother or, I don't know, nicking something or kicking the neighbor's cat or something like that. And at some point you get hit with guilt and you go very silent and your parents know that you've done wrong. But to mutilate your own brother and then carry his corpse miles and chuck it in a sack in a river and then not say nothing and not even go to pieces, you know, and break down and things like that, it's a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
And that was the police narrative. So we're seeing this again when we go back to the Moira Anderson one, that they did it there to a guy that was a little bit slow on the uptake. He gets stitched up with it. We're now seeing it with his brother, with Brian McDermott's brother. And we're going to see this time and time and time again. The same pattern again, 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 again. So Brian McDermott is a really, really interesting case. And it ties in with all so much.
Yeah.
And it basically ties in with the boy business, that there was a business in the trading, the trafficking of young boys.
Now, if anybody would like to know a little bit more about the care home scenario, the situation in Ireland, now just forgive me if I get his name wrong. Is it Richard Kerr or Robert Kerr?
Richard Kerr.
Kerr, that's it. There's a few interviews on Sean's channel. They'll be down and linked down below. This man's story is really, it's horrendous. And this is a very crucial part in Brian's story. So I advise anybody who would, you know, can't wait till next week or whatever, needs, you know, need to dive into this more, go and watch those. They're linked down below and they will further explain the atrocities that went on there. And this is where it gets a bit interesting, because we spoke about the West, okay? We've spoken about Sidney Cook, but there's also the Yorkshire Ripper, Mark Dutroux, and the Moors murders. And of course, the Dunblane massacre, which, for example, the Mark Dutroux, the Yorkshire Ripper, the Wests, these are all massive cases. These are all, like, huge. And what's important for people to try and understand is what we're really getting at here is some individuals went a bit, you know, maybe took things, you know, way too far for the people they worked with. For example, the Yorkshire Ripper, the Wests, okay? They did a lot more than just procure children, take them somewhere, and then partake and leave. You know, there was a much more darker, twisted, further darker and twisted than it already is in these individuals. And certainly it wouldn't be out of the question, John, individuals, the Yorkshire Ripper, the Moors murders, the Wests, it all points to procurers, almost as if they're being selected by a larger group to facilitate this unknown group's need for children.
Like I say, this is like the boy business or the child business. Yeah. It's not this random, what's the word for it? When you're just opportunistic.
No, well, that's exactly it. This is the thing. We arguably, if we look at every single child abduction and murder case in the UK, there's going to be a percentage of opportunistic killers and things like that. But the MOs and the cases are completely different, you know? And we've got to look at miles travelled in a lot of these cases. Look at a 14-year-old boy murdering his brother, popping him in a sack, and then just, what, walking down the road a few miles? I mean, it's kind of insane for an adult with a driving licence to be able to transport a body, let alone a 14-year-old. And then you've got kids getting on trains, whether it's the Dutroux case or back to the 50s again. Kids shouldn't, the excuses for where the bodies turn up compared to where the bodies were taken from is another thing that is worth noting.
Well, it gets even darker because 2 years later, a young girl, 11-year-old girl called Leslie Mulseed, goes missing from her home in Rochdale, and pops down the shops. She's a little bit slow educationally. She's a little bit subnormal. She had a heart defect, so she's very, very, very small and skinny. I think she's something like 3 stone in weight. She was a real sort of dot of a little girl.
Yeah.
And she sort of just pops to the shop, runs for an errand. Again, exactly the same scenario as Moira Anderson. Little Leslie pops to the shop and that's it. Never ever seen again. And days later, her body is found on the moors near Saddleworth Moor in Yorkshire. Again, the site of many murders by Hindley and Brady. They're sort of all connected in this area, and there was always rumours of a satanic group. I'm going to go into a bit more detail about that in a second. And a guy finds the body, and the police come, and it goes up to the crime scene. And what happens is they arrest a guy called Stefan Kishko, who was a civil servant. He was never hurt anyone in his life. And he gets stitched up for the murder of this little girl. And he ends up serving 16 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And the copper who arrests him is praised by and convicts him, is praised by the courts for a job well done.
Yeah.
He's later moved to to head the Ripper inquiry, where he ballses that up as well.
Okay, I just want to pause you there for a second. So the individual who was in charge of this case was promoted and then put in charge of the Ripper case. Now, I just want to point out that what was the gentleman's name? Kishko. What was his first name? Stefan Kishko.
Stefan Kishko.
16 years later, the way that his case was handled, okay, and this is a direct quote, it was referred to as the greatest and worst miscarriage of justice of all time, okay, by the legal team in charge of the case being reopened in 1992. The greatest and worst miscarriage of justice of all time. Yeah. And just to reiterate, the person who was in charge of the greatest miscarriage of justice of all time, was he fired or promoted, John?
He was promoted.
That's right, John. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, massively promoted, way above his ability.
Now, when we were talking previously about incompetence and the way that this has all been put together, it's almost like you could have a bunch of incompetent individuals being run by an individual who knows what's going on and is on the payroll of this ring, right? It's almost like a picture's forming.
Yeah, and also there was semen found on the body. The little girl, Leslie Mossig, was stabbed 12 times in the back. And the knife with such ferocity went straight through her body on a couple of stabs.
Jesus.
And there was semen found. And the strange thing is, Kishko had a medical condition where he could produce semen but not sperm. And there was sperm found in the semen. And it wasn't his.
Yeah.
It wasn't his. It was only later, very, very similar to like Brian Fields with him, police went and the guy gets arrested for, I think the sex assault of a prostitute. And this guy gets arrested and he's brought in, and they send off the analysis, and it comes back as a hit, for this. And what's his name? Ronald Castry.
And this is just to point out again, this is in 2006 when Ronald Castry is arrested for this. Okay?
Yeah.
2006. Kishko's already done 17 years for this.
Yeah.
The greatest miscarriage of justice. And that was in 92. 14 years again. 14 years is when Robert Castry was eventually apprehended.
And he is inside. He has a terrible time. He's brutalized and all sorts.
Happy days.
What's his name? Stefan Kishko.
Oh, that's terrible, but
we got Castry again. When you look at Castry, a really, really screwed up individual. Brutal to his wife and children. He was raping his own children. He was a pervert. He was a serial rapist. He was a pedophile. He just wasn't a nice guy. So, his semen comes back as a hit. But also, at the scene, there was numerous sightings of another guy. And that guy was a man called Raymond Hewlett. Right? And Raymond Hewlett is an absolute massive abuser. He even cropped up as a suspect on the McCann murder. And Hewlett was a fairground worker, a transient itinerant fairground worker, and was seen on the day at the same location as where the body of little Leslie Mossig was dumped. Raymond Hewlett was, he did crop up as a suspect because he was seen at the same Prior Deluge at the same time. He was suspect, but he was transient. He used to travel around Europe getting odd jobs, and he was always arrested for a string of sexual offences. But he worked as on the fairgrounds and travelled the UK, and wherever he went, there was always offending against children, you know. And so he was brought in for the Lizzie Mulsey thing, but it you know, it was Castree that was convicted of killing her in the end.
Yeah.
But you know, these, you know, we're looking at like a big Peter thing, but also there's a case, a story went out in the papers around Saddleworth, around there, and it was a case of the Casson cult. And it's an interesting article that went out by an investigative journalist, and it was all to do with a guy called Casson who lived in Saddleworth, and he was actively involved in Satanism, you know, and he is connected to the Lizzie Mulsey case, and it's very, very, very strange. I'm trying to find out where this is, because I did a bit of research on this, and there's a couple of stories that went out, and there's a connection with this guy Casson to Sir Garth Morrison, who was a chief in charge of the Scouts, and Morrison was also connected to Jimmy Savile.
Okay.
Sir Garth Morrison. He was, you know, well known, knighted for his services to scouting. He's pretty much doing the job that Bear Grylls was doing. An ex-naval guy, knighted by Her Majesty in 2007. And he is linked to this guy Casson, and he is also, Morrison, linked to Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, it's
and then we can link Casson in with Hewitt and Castree. So we've got, you know, and of course, linking in with the Saddleworth connections, you know, this is where it links in with Cyril Smith.
Yeah.
And of course, the case of wrongful conviction of Kishko was put to the MP, who was Cyril Smith.
Correct.
And it was all boshed and went nowhere.
And who's, I mean, Cyril Smith obviously has connections with Thatcher. Thatcher has connections with Savile. And again, I understand that some of you are going to be sitting there like, this is a lot to recap. Trust me, when you start seeing faces on a mind map with arrows connecting everything and it's all color-coded, it becomes a lot easier to digest all of this. And it's a scary and shocking reality that's unfolding in front of us, John, because even in the Savile case, you know, we talk about Jimmy Savile. There was hundreds of arrests after Jimmy Savile was exposed. And
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
It's interesting how we hear about the big hitters and the big names in those cases, but a lot of them sort of fly under the radar, and that in itself, hundreds of people all connected to one individual. Is that not a ring in itself, John?
Of course, and because what we've got to look at is, you know, the connection to satanic groups.
Yeah, of course.
Covens and cults, who are, not only are they abusers of children, they're also producers of child pornography.
Yeah.
And snuff movies.
Yeah.
So again, there's a business in that. There's money that they make from holding rituals for people that want success in business, or they want opposition taken out, or they want someone killed, or they want someone to get cancer, or whatever. So they'll make huge money in that, because, you know, to procure a kid and then hold the kid and then torture the kid and dispose of it, there's a lot of logistics in there. There's a lot of planning in there. There's a lot of covering up and cleaning up in all of that.
I mean, there's a theory, that a lot of boats leave from Amsterdam, head out to international waters, and it's all done there. And the lobsters feed on the corpses of these murdered children. And that... There's a documentary called The Boy Business that goes over that entire theory. And
Yeah. And of course, you know, they chuck the bodies overboard. And if you're 12 miles out, you know, no one knows. And they film it. And there's money. There's big money. I mean, back in the 1980s, a child video was worth the same price as a brand new family saloon car. Yeah, that's that. And that was official. That came from the head of the pedophile unit told me of that. Scotland Yards told me, you know, this is how much money was involved. And so you can imagine how much a snuff movie was. And that part of the world as well. I'm talking to a survivor of ritual abuse from the area would have been the same age as Leslie Molseed. This woman's always campaigned, you know, that her father gets exposed. And he was best friends with both Castry and Casson. And she said, you know, and she was abused by them all. And she said, you know, they abused us all. Well, you know, I'm living testimony, because she's an intergenerational survivor.
Yeah.
But she said, you know, kids were killed, and they were killed. So it's nothing new. We're saying the same pattern coming up, but the police cover-ups in the Leslie Molseed thing, it was just absolutely appalling. You know? And again, it took a lot of campaigning. It was his mother who campaigned and campaigned and campaigned for her son to get out, and the police wouldn't change their attitude. And then, of course, the copper that was commended by the judge for swift and effective and diligent investigation into Kishko, they later realised it was just an absolute monumental cock-up. The judge failed to see error in what he had done. Apologised.
Cock-up implies a mistake that nobody intended, John. It certainly wasn't a cock-up. It was a well-orchestrated plan.
Of course.
You know?
Of course, yeah.
I'm sorry to correct you there. It's just... the term, we've got to use the right terminology here, because these people, it would be a lot easier to sleep at night if it was a cock up, you know?
Well, what is it they always say? Lessons have been learned. You know, that's the same.
Have they though? No,
lessons have been learned.
Yeah.
No, let's move on. Let's put this down as a bad experience.
Yeah.
And let's hope this never happens again. And that's it, case closed, set up, and, you know, so very interesting case. And, of course, someone has picked up on this, and like we've mentioned on the series before, and I've alluded to it, please, please, please watch Channel 4's Triology, Red Riding, and it's all about not just the Leslie Molseed, Stefan Kishko saga, it also ties in with the Yorkshire Ripper, Jimmy Savile, Peter Sutcliffe, businessmen, Freemasonry, Satanism, the police corruption. It's got the whole lot. And this in essence is what we are looking at with every single one of these cases. We are looking
correct. At
the fool guy who cops it. Sometimes they get the right one. Sometimes they don't. And when I say the right one, it's really the mug, the puppet that cops it for all of them. Behind it is a PR group, a child pornography group, a filmmaking group, a ritualistic abuse group, businessmen, dodgy coppers, clergy, politicians, and on it goes. On it goes.
It does.
But Red Riding sums it up so well.
Yeah.
But,
Red Riding, the boy business, go and watch them. There'll be links in the description for interviews that cover the atrocities that went over in the Irish boys' home as well. And like I say, the visuals for this do help a lot. I know it's complicated, but don't let the complication of this lead your brain to go, oh, I'm just going to write this off. It's too much for my brain to deal with. Stick with it. Over the next few weeks, like I say, this is all going to come together. And when you start looking at, for example, this is what the first one we've done was the Jill Dando case. They often talk about Jill Dando knowing something that she shouldn't have. And that could have had a lot to do with Savile, right? For argument's sake, let's just say, for a second, Jill Dando knew about Savile or something along those lines and was going to go public with it. The way she was killed and the way that everything was handled is the identical MO to how a lot of these child cases are handled. It's pinned on somebody and then at a later date we find out, oh well, it was a monumental cock-up of police investigation. Even down to how the crime scene was handled on the day is incredibly suspicious. And even though that is not a child abduction case, it's very interesting when individuals try and, you know, allegedly put forward information and then, you know, they're shot on their doorstep.
Yep, that's right. And then stitch up a retarded person.
Yeah, again.
And then the same thing, lessons learned, you know, and then destroy the crime scene.
That's it.
I mean, getting hundreds of ambulance
tread
all over
yeah.
it and, you know, drop cannulas everywhere and decimate the crime scene and that's it. And it takes some planning. And that's what I always say. Look at who attacks you and who backs you.
And there's pretty much
your answer.
Next time there's a crime in your area, see how many ambulances turn up and see how long it takes for them to get there. Okay? Because that alone is just insane. How many ambulances turned up, the crime scene not being secured. And again, it's not exciting to be unearthing all of this stuff. It's great. The only feeling of sort of joy you get is, yeah, we're getting the bastards. You know, that's the drive for it all. But it's sad, it's grim, and the fact is, if there was ways for us to investigate things over the last 200, 300, 400 years, I'm sure all of this would be prevalent as far back as the demonic entities at the center of all of these rituals have been around.
I mean, what I've found interesting with this is that if we look at the case of Brian McDermott, we've got this Colin Wallace, this intelligence officer, who highlighted, as a result of looking into the ritualistic stuff, first time we really hear that officially mentioned, and they go out and try and make up mock sites to detract the focus from the real sites. And also they were decimating sites by pouring animal blood that they said they got from butchers over it. So you're contaminating the real DNA with animal DNA.
Correct.
And they were doing this deliberately.
Of course.
And because there was a very active person that was known as the Royal Profile, which was Mountbatten. Lots of information about him. We saw it with Operation Conifer, with Ted Heath, that not only was he a paedophile and a child rapist, he was also an active Satanist. And that came out officially in the findings of that. So we got these two top people. Now, that's information that, you know, if the Catholics could have got hold of that and put that information out during the times of the Troubles, I mean, that would be so dangerous for the Protestants, which would have been the ruling party in the north. And that could have caused problems because 90% of Western Europe is Catholic. So it would have caused uproar. And of course, with the Americans, what their attitude be? And it was funny because at the same time, with the Kinkora stuff coming out, the FBI started a profile on Mountbatten, and they said this man's a pervert and should never be allowed to be decision making in the military, which he was allowed to do. And of course, Colin Wallace then, with that information, he went to the British government and said, you know, this is what's going on. And boys are going missing. You need to look at who is coming and going from Kinkora, because this needs to stop, because he knew the boys were being murdered and raped. Very shortly afterwards, Colin Wallace is stitched up for a murder that he had nothing to do with and served 10 years in prison. 10 years,
yeah.
He served in prison. So they'll even do it to one of their own. And there's a documentary called The Man Who Knew Too Much. He wasn't alone. There was another army officer who spoke out as well. And he actually came to the assistance of Richard Kerr. Richard went and met with him. You know, it's just all built around perversion. Yeah. We should never underestimate the power of people here and how integral it is in manipulating and controlling global politics. I mean, we've not even gone on about the West. And I mean, we will look at the West.
Of course,
we can then take this. And how many kids? 390 kids. And we can now link in Fred West with the police, with sex parties, with porn films, with prostitution, and we're supplying children and people for satanic rituals. And then, of course, what happens to him? He dies exactly the same way, with the same MO as Epstein. Exactly the same. You know, we're seeing the same pattern. We the one thing is, these algorithms keep popping up again and again and again, yeah, all the time.
And again, it's awfully, one thing I said to you during the West episode, it's awfully interesting that Fred and Rosemary met each other and were both into the same horrificness. Now, just think about this, right? If you and your missus are into fishing and you meet your missus on a Facebook fishing page or on like an annual angler's retreat, okay, that is a common story. You have a common interest. You meet through that common interest. Arguably, John, right? These two could have met through the same... Because I just can't imagine you're in the pub and you're like, all right, what's your name? Oh, my name's Fred. Your name's Rosemary. Oh, by the way, do you fancy abducting and murdering some kids?
And Rose was quite happy to proffer her own children up.
Oh, yeah, she was
offering that. For these rituals and for these sex parties.
Correct.
So it was win-win all around.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very bizarre. And we see that quite a lot with child murders. We've seen it in the papers quite a bit, where a little kid is battered to death and mum and step-parent are both having a go.
I think they learned... How
do these people meet?
I think they learned their lesson with the West. I think that was the last era of long leashes on the individuals acquiring the kids. I think it's short leash generation now. I think the West's just... even in the eyes of these individuals, were doing too much in the public, as opposed to it just being behind the barn doors.
Well, I think when we look at it on an industrial scale, we look at the washhouses in Southern Ireland, where when they've excavated the land, they found hundreds of baby skeletons.
Yeah,
I mean that was the sacrifice of children on an industrial scale, and they got away with it for decades.
Yep.
Decades.
And again,
so
people,
it can be done.
People who are sitting there who are saying, oh, now it's gone too far. How can these people get away from it for decades? I just want to take us back to the care home people who are winning awards for lifetime achievements on one side, and then behind closed doors, they're butchering humans.
Well, I think we can make this more user-friendly. And say, look at the guy that was a saint who built spinal injury units and run marathons and raised £14 million.
Yeah.
You know? and had TV programs. Yeah. I got knighted, got a papal knighthood. Get this, you know. And he, I mean, he was.
It's wild. Just on the subject of the blonde haired charitable gentleman.
Yeah.
Did you watch the BBC series?
Yes. The Reckoning.
How good was that? I mean, just take away the fact that it's about a monster and let's just focus on storytelling, cinematography, and Coogan's acting just for five minutes, right? I thought it was up there with Band of Brothers for production. I was blown away. What a sensationally put together series. I think the way that they done the moments of tension and the moments of where something horrible is going to happen.
Was brilliant without actually showing horrible things happening.
Yes.
It was powerful. Brilliant. But what really frustrated me most was when they had he was about to be offered the role and he was competing against others and it was just given to him.
Yeah.
And the lady in charge, she just said, "No, this man's a monster, he's a pervert, he's this." And so when they did the self-adjudication to BBC and they said, "Look, there's nothing to see." I mean, what planet were they on?
John,
made that decision?
John, the subconscious tale that we've all just been exposed to is a very this is the one thing I picked up on. The whole series was a cleverly put together BBC display of how everybody knew at the BBC. Yeah, so it's a collective fault. Because look at all the people who knew, the men outside the door, the secretaries, the nurses. It can't just, we've got to share the blame. Do you see, that's the hidden message that I got from the series, which left a bit of a brutal taste in my mouth, if I'm being honest.
Which takes it to another question. Louis Theroux, a very intelligent, clever, investigative journalist. And when you watch Louis Meets Jimmy, he had already was pre-armed with the questions for Jimmy Savile about his suspected philia.
Yeah. Listen, all I'm saying is it doesn't matter how good a journalist you are. If you're investigating somebody who's mates with the Yorkshire Ripper and he wants to put the shits up you, I believe Jimmy Savile was an expert in mental manipulation.
This was what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Louis Theroux, in his snaky, I'm thick and I'm ignorant approach to interviewing, which is brilliant. I must say it's brilliant. And it is a tradecraft that we used to employ on specialist interviewing. He's very, very good. But towards the end, without a doubt, Savile was totally and utterly playing him and manipulating him. He'd met his match, Louis Theroux.
100%.
And Savile totally and utterly had him.
I feel like Louis shifted to somebody who looked like he was riding it out and just wanted to survive the last filming sessions of this.
Yep. And this shows how powerful and clever Savile was. And without a doubt, this is a very, very horrible, devious, dangerous man.
If we're to believe what we've seen in the Savile series, Jimmy Savile would quite happily look you in the eye, knowing that you feel like your life's in danger, if we're to assume Louis was put in the hot seat. We're talking about an individual who, you know, abused a girl in a wheelchair whilst recording her so that it went out onto national air mid-abuse. I mean, if that is not a testament to the man's, not even just his narcissism, but his sick and twisted mind, I don't know what is. I mean, I don't know.
But he was procuring runaway kids for parties. Some of them kids were never seen again.
Yep.
So this is what they never showed on that.
Yeah. They dulled it. I mean, they picked the victims and they focused, because, I mean, let's be honest, it would have been a 200-part series. It really would have.
Oh, yeah. But there was no inference on that as well. They should have inferred he was doing this. And also, this guy was a grand wizard in some satanic sect, and he was. Now, that would have had the major, you know, it's a bit like Freemasonry. It holds power, and they never alluded to that.
What the fuck was he wearing on Songs of Praise, by the way? Did you see it with the green thing with like the big hood that came up? Was it on Songs of Praise? I think it was. He's had some mad outfits over the years. I will say that.
No, that's it. He wore this bizarre, real weird.
It looked like a big. It looked like.
Like a monkey type.
The bastard child of like a ceremonial robe and a dressing gown. Do you know
what
I mean?
I remember. There's that photo got released of him like as a grand wizard of some bizarre.
It's fucking mad.
I know.
If you go and look at ritualistic ensemble and then look at what he's wearing, it's a bit sus. It's a bit sus when, you know, Catholic priests have, you know, symbols that have been released by the FBI to, indicate, you know, their want for interactions with children. That's a bit weird. It's a bit weird when Disney releases, you know, children's animations that have the same symbols all over the characters.
Symbols and
I
mean, again, judge a person by the company they keep. So he was the people he was hanging around with and who was hanging around him. More knowingly, look, we went on about Mountbatten, known as the Par Royal, Charles was his his protege, as it were. Savile and Charles were best friends. Charles's best mate was Peter Ball, the Peter Bishop. Again, Peter and Charles go hand in hand, and he is now the monarch of this land, and that's a dangerous situation I think we're in now.
It doesn't get any better, put it that way. I mean, it really, really doesn't. We just got to look at, let's not go down the royal road, but we all know what went on a certain island with a certain man and a certain list of names. And even through massive public inquiry, nothing has happened.
Again, this is all like, we've learnt lessons, let's move on. The same thing, learnt lessons, let's move on. Someone's killed, they've committed suicide, and everything dies with that person. Let's put it all on one boat and sink that boat. Yeah. And that's what they do all the time. Or we'll just stitch up someone who's got special needs. That's the other one. The pattern is there. The algorithm. Bang.
We're laughing here because we kind of get the
It's a sick joke.
It is. That's exactly what it is. Oh man, I just want to state once again: neither of John and I are suicidal in any way. So if we pop up with a note written, it wasn't through our own doing. I just want to point that out right now. Well, listen, is there anything else you want to just touch on during this recap episode before we start winding down?
No, I would say please look at the parallels that we've drawn and look, stay tuned because
we're going to make it easier.
We've got a groundbreaking one coming up, which is going to need some legal advice and it's good. It's really good.
And again, we know it's a lot to take in. There is visuals coming. I'll show you some on screen just now so you know that I'm not blowing smoke up your backsides. But once this is released, you will be able to sit down, go through each case, and then everything will be connected in a beautiful color-coded visual that is destined to ruin whatever evening you sit down to consume it on. Thank you, John, for joining me once again. It is one of the highlights of my week, us sitting here and discussing this stuff. And you know, we're coming up to Halloween, where then we'll be coming up for Christmas, and we'll be getting some things planned there. Maybe we'll, what I'd quite like to do, John, is maybe do a month where each week we bring on a working professional in forensics and we discuss how maybe science and things like that are used in cases to solve them, blood splatter or whatever, and then we'll maybe start thinking about how we're going to ruin everyone's Christmas.
I've got a couple. I've just been put in touch with someone who runs probably the biggest independent forensic company. So
wicked, fantastic.
I'll see what I can do. I can see what I can do. Without a doubt, I think we can bring on probably the best sex murderer, sex offender, profiler, child murderer, profiler in the world. I think she's a friend of Sean Atwood's show, Corinne Hutzdebart. I'm sure she will oblige.
That would be amazing. Well, listen, lots for us to look forward to, a lot of information to look forward to, and thank you, John. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and make sure you're subscribed. Please find a link to my channel, Project Rook, down below, John's socials. Make sure you're subscribed to the Sean Atwood channel with the bells on. Leave us a like, leave a comment, let us know what you think about this series. And of course, From me, Ron Swanson, as always, be safe out there.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.